difference. Welcome to the Chronic Slippers Special Focus Meeting. My name is Sheila. I'm a compulsive overeater and your speaker for this meeting. Hi, everybody. And we already did the Serenity Prayer. Before we get started, we ask that all cell phones or other electronic devices please be turned off. And to protect anonymity, no photography, audio, or visual recording is allowed except as recorded by the committee. Please be aware that if you are speaking or sharing and say your first name, your voice will be audible on the recording. The opinions expressed here today are those of individual OA members and do not represent Region 2 or Overeaters Anonymous as a whole. Would somebody please come up and read the 12 steps? Please.
Hello, my name is Eileen. I'm a compulsive overeater. The 12 steps of Overeaters Anonymous. 1, we admitted we were powerless over food, that our lives had become unmanageable. 2, came to believe that a power greater than ourselves could restore us to sanity. 3, made a decision to turn our will and our lives over to the care of God as we understood him. 4, made a searching and fearless moral inventory of ourselves. 5, admitted to God, to ourselves, and to another human being the exact nature of our wrongs. 6, were entirely ready to have God remove all these defects of character. 7, humbly asked him to remove our shortcomings. 8, made a list of all persons we had harmed and became willing to make amends to them all. 9, made direct amends to such people wherever possible, except when to do so would injure them or others. 10, continued to take personal inventory, and when we were wrong, promptly admitted it. 11, sought through prayer and meditation to improve our conscious contact with God as we understood God, praying only for knowledge of his will for us and the power to carry that out. 12, having had a spiritual awakening as the result of these steps, we try to carry this message to compulsive overeaters and to practice these principles in all our affairs.
Thank you very much. I appreciate that. Okay. All right. We have a format. There's going to be a short reading, and then I'm going to share. And the topic for this special focus meeting is chronic slippers. And then we will open it up. If anybody has questions, I can certainly weigh in and give you my 2 cents, or you can share. We've got all kinds of flexibility in terms of what we can do. And what I am reading here, it looks like this is something from one of the for today readings. Many strokes overthrow the tallest oaks. If I slip, I will try again. Practice makes perfect, and I expect to practice abstinence. I get it. What is the alternative? It's an encouraging sign to be able to give yourself a chance to go back and do things differently without judgment or self-condemnation. For example, did I hear and act upon program suggestions and slogans such as half measures availed us nothing, willing to go to any lengths, keep it simple, one day at a time? Whether I'm struggling with abstinence or personality defects, those are the words on which I can rely. And for today, I will not waste time blaming myself, but instead try again. Okay, now I'm going to share my experience, strength, and hope on the subject of chronic slipping. And my name is Sheila. I'm a compulsive overeater. And I'm very, very grateful to be here. I have kind of a trick knee, so I'll stand as long as I can. And sometimes I, you know, will need to take a break. But I'm really, really happy to be here. And I've been in, I was looking to see if I had my pictures. I don't know if I can, I'm not really a multitasker, but I think I might have some pictures. So maybe when somebody else gets up and shares, I can pass them. But I've been in Overeaters Anonymous for, I guess, 27 years. I got sober in Alcoholics Anonymous, and I turned to somebody after about 3 months, and I said, do you think people can have a problem with overeating the same way you have a problem with alcohol? She said, absolutely, go to Overeaters Anonymous. And she was thin. I was fat. I used to weigh 200 pounds. And I said, well, I mean, God, how do you know about Overeaters Anonymous? You're thin. She said, well, I didn't used to be. Go check out Overeaters Anonymous. So I went to my first Overeaters Anonymous meeting, and if I would have taken the direction that I had gotten in that very first Overeaters Anonymous meeting, I wouldn't be here today. I wouldn't, right? Because I came in my meeting, I got sober and went to my first OA meeting in the Midwest in Michigan, and it was an 11 a.m. meeting, right? And so I'd been in AA for 3 months doing the deal, staying sober, working the steps with a sponsor, right? I know how to follow directions, so I got real clear about that. So I figured probably the same rules applied, and I figure, you know, I'm overweight. I'm going to Overeaters Anonymous. Probably the solution is not to eat. So I showed up at an 11 a.m. meeting, and I had not had breakfast, right? And went through the whole meeting, so now my blood sugar's tanking a little bit, right? I come from a family of diabetics who die. So real serious diabetes, and I don't have diabetes, but I'm real clear about how this whole blood sugar thing works. And now it's noon, right? And I haven't eaten, and I've just listened to an OA meeting, and I'm wondering what this whole abstinence thing is. And it was a small meeting in the Midwest, and I remember it was this beautiful African-American woman leading the meeting, and I remember I was so impressed because she had a doctorate in accounting, and I had a sister who was an accountant, so I just thought that was so cool. And afterwards, I went up to her, and I said, okay, so what's the deal with this abstinence thing? And she said, well, honey, what brought you here? And I said, well, I've got a real problem with sugar. I got a real problem with sugar. And she said, well, what if you just didn't eat sugar just for today and just ate three meals? Do you think you could just eat three meals and not eat sugar just for today? And I said, well, I don't know. I guess I could give it a whirl. And here's the thing. Now, I don't remember the next part of the conversation. I hope she mentioned 12 steps to me. I hope she said something about sponsorship. And the reason that I hope she did that, because that's our primary purpose, right? My primary purpose is to abstain from compulsive eating and help others to achieve abstinence. And I don't help anybody if I send them out the door and say, ah, you got a problem with sugar, don't eat sugar and do three meals. But I'm going to go on the assumption that she actually did say those things, right? But I do remember hearing the first part, don't eat sugar and do three meals a day. So now it's about 12:30, so I left that meeting and I thought, okay, well, I haven't had any meals, so this is cool. I got three meals in front of me. So, no, it's a good day. And I went to a restaurant. And it's one of those kind of those overnight type restaurants, right? I don't know if we can mention stuff on the recording. So, but it's one of those popular restaurants where, you know, college kids go after you've drunk all night, right? And then you go and you binge there in the middle of the night. And I know, having done that, right, many times. So I went to this restaurant, sat down. I remember I ordered a breakfast type meal because it's a Saturday and they did breakfast all day. And I remember she brought this breakfast meal. So it was the eggs, the bacon, the toast, and the little thing of juice. And I had it in front of me, and I thought, wow, I've actually never had this meal in front of me when I wasn't drunk in the middle of the night, right, after I'd been at the bar all night, right? And I ate the meal and really enjoyed it. And I went back out to my car, and I sat down, and I thought, okay. Because, again, remember, I've had 3 months in AA, so I know how this works. I know I'm going to have to get a sponsor and probably going to have to do some step work. I thought, okay, she said three meals a day, no sugar. No. It's got to be more complicated than that. And for the next dozen years, I proceeded to complicate it, right? Now, here's the cool thing. Here's the deal, right? So the weight loss, I'm maintaining a 60-pound weight loss. I weigh about 135. The weight loss is the least interesting transformation that has happened in my life. It's the least interesting transformation, right? And the most interesting transformation is the internal one, right? It's the thing that happens that Silkworth talks about, right? The psychic change and the vital spiritual experience that Jung goes on to later talk about, those are the same things. And Jung actually breaks it down and describes it for us and tells us that a vital spiritual experience means ideas, emotions, and attitudes, which were once the driving force of these people, have been absolutely transformed. So it literally gets picked up, turned around, does a complete 180, and then set down again. So the way I used to live my life has completely changed. That's what happens when you work the steps. That's why they talk about it when you get to the end of step 9, and they say that you will probably, you'll have had this spiritual awakening. And it's why 6 times in the big book it says, this is the story of how people have recovered, right? Because the reality is, and I just heard Harlan talking about this in his big book workshop, right? And he pointed somebody out, a guy who came in who's got 35 years of abstinence, and he said, that guy probably didn't wake up with the obsession to eat. And the reality is he didn't. That's what it means recovered, right? That you don't have that drive to eat anymore, right? But that's the transformation. That's the only one that matters. And when I do that step work, right, there's a transformation that happens within, and then it can't help but show up on my body. Right? So put that on a post-it on the wall. That's how this whole deal works. So I came in though, and so I started working the steps. I got a sponsor and I started working the steps. Came in at 200 pounds. I was 24 years old, I guess. And I wasn't done. I wasn't done with the sugar. I just wasn't. I was not done with the sugar. That's the whole deal, is whether or not somebody's done. That's the whole deal. And what's behind the done? Are you ready to feel the feelings? Because the reality is, if you grew up, I grew up in an alcoholic home, a very, there was violence, there was incest, there was raging, and I always say the worst thing that happened in my home is that people weren't talking to each other. Nobody communicated to one another. That felt like the worst of the worst. It really did, right? But I didn't have any tools, so I had to turn to food. And I turned to food from when I was very, very young. I started stealing candy bars when I was 4 years old. We had a family friend who was a grocer. This is the man who later molested me. But he used to give me inappropriate kisses in exchange for candy bars. And I can remember the day standing in front of the candy counter, and I thought, well, I'm just going to start stealing these things because I don't know what he's doing, but it doesn't feel right. Something's not right here, right? And I started stealing them. So stealing was a big part of my story, and sugar was huge for me. When I was 7 years old, my 15-year-old brother got diagnosed with diabetes. And so all of a sudden, we were kind of lower middle class people from the Midwest. All of a sudden, all the sugar disappeared from our house. My parents were fairly unsophisticated, didn't really know what to do. So they just figured, well, we got a diabetic kid. They had five kids, by the way. He was the oldest. But so they pulled all the sugar out of the house. So now we got a problem, right? Because I'm 7 years old. I've already established 3 years before that I'm willing to steal when I need this stuff. So now we got a kid and there's no sugar in my house. Game on, right? So Halloween, I would literally, you know, we used to trick-or-treat in the Midwest with a pillowcase. Kids are like, now, you know, I babysit and I used to be a nanny and stuff years ago. Kids are like, oh, look at my little pumpkin. I'm like, little pumpkin? Where's the pillowcase? You can't get anything out of that dumb little pumpkin, right? So, I mean, I used to blow through my stuff. I have a filling in just about every molar of my mouth. I mean, I ate unfathomable amounts of sugar. I really did. It's just by the grace of God that I never came down with the diabetes because it's mind-boggling how much sugar I used to be able to eat. And I do have a pretty fast metabolism. My mother was an athlete. But it's just amazing how much sugar I used to eat. So I came in, started working the steps, and I wasn't done with the sugar. But the cool thing is I started working the steps. So in terms of chronic slipping, this being a chronic slipping workshop, and I work with chronic slippers exclusively. I only sponsor chronic slippers, both in this program and in Alcoholics Anonymous, right? I always say I want the sponsee that nobody else wants. And because what I'm going to do is, and I can't fix anybody, I'm real clear, right? I believe the A, B, and C we read at the end of how it works, right? We were alcoholic and could not manage our own life, that probably no human power could have relieved our alcoholism. C, that God couldn't would if he were sought, right? Because if I could save people, my mother and my brother wouldn't be dead from diabetes, right? Because I would have solved their problem, right? Doesn't work that way. But what I'm really good at helping people do, helping chronic slippers do, is figure out the lie. Because somewhere there's a lie. Somewhere you're telling yourself a lie. If you're chronically slipping, right, somewhere you're telling yourself a lie. I don't know what the lie is, right? Maybe the lie has to do with you figure, well, if I put the food down and kind of shed that weight, maybe I'm going to have to go back and do that graduate degree and kind of pursue the career I always wanted to pursue but was afraid to do because somebody told me when I was a kid I wasn't good enough. Or maybe I'm going to have to get out of the marriage with the husband who's knocking me around, right? Or maybe it's nothing that dramatic. Maybe it's just I'm afraid. I'm afraid. I'm afraid to discover who I am and what I'm about. I don't know. But all I'm saying is let's just figure it out. Let's just tell the truth, right? And it might be that the taste of food, because for a long time for me, it was just the taste of food. It was just I didn't want to not have a hot fudge sundae, right? I didn't. I mean, again, as an alcoholic and a drug addict, you could have lined up a bottle of tequila, a line of cocaine, a joint, a carton of Marlboro Greens, and a hot fudge sundae. I would have run to the hot fudge sundae. I still would, right? That is my drug of choice. Sugar, specifically chocolate, is my drug of choice. So I wasn't ready to put it down. I wasn't done. But I came in, and I started working the steps right away. That's the name of the game. Start the step work. Now, there are some people who theorize in Overeaters Anonymous that you can't work the steps unless you put the food down. I'm not one of those people. And I don't get into discussions because usually those people want to argue about it, right? Right? Because that's the nature of who we are, right? We're convinced that we're right and the other person is wrong. That's part of that self-centeredness that it talks about in the book, right? I got this covered. You're a wingnut. I'll smile and, you know, be polite, but right? Just till you see the light. And the light, of course, will be when you're looking my way, right? And I've got the light right here. Yes? So the deal is, right, I don't argue about this with people. Why? Because it wasn't true from my experience. It wasn't true from my experience. I came in and I got directed by a sponsor in Overeaters Anonymous to work the steps regardless of what I was eating. So when I got to my fourth step and I was still in the sugar, still in the food, right, still doing quantity eating, because again, I weighed 200 pounds. So she said, honey, I don't care if you've got a pen in your right hand and a Snickers bar in your left hand, you get that fourth step done. And she also gave me a date and a time to have it done. It wasn't this ethereal thing like, oh, now you're on a fourth step. Good luck with that. It was, okay, so you're starting now. I think she gave me, I don't know, I want to say a month or 2 months. I know for me, I give sponsees 2 weeks. So it doesn't take a long time, especially because I sponsor people from using the steps of the Big Book of Alcoholics Anonymous. OA has fine literature. I've read most of it. Love it. I've done the OA workbook 3 or 4 times. Good stuff. But I sponsor from the primary source material. I'm an academic at heart, so I sponsor from the primary source material. So it doesn't take a long time to do an inventory. At any rate, so she had directed me to do this inventory, and then I finished the inventory. I read it to her. I did the deal. And then all of a sudden, 2 years have gone by, and I've been in Overeaters Anonymous. I have not stopped eating the sugar. As far as I was concerned, and clearly, I still hadn't stopped the quantity eating, right? But I'd lost 20 pounds. Now, I had a father who had 3 daughters, and we were all overweight. And he didn't like having overweight daughters, and he made that real clear. And let me tell you something. You do some real damage. And fathers probably do the same kind of damage to a boy, but there's something to a girl, different about it for a girl, if your daddy doesn't think you're pretty because you're overweight. There's some real deal damage that happens there, right? And I love my father. He took responsibility before he died. I love him. I was in an eating disorder unit, and he flew out and got in the middle of a, you know, circle with a bunch of angry women surrounding him who'd listen to me complain about my father for the month before he got there. So kudos to my daddy for taking responsibility. But the point was, right, I was a really wounded bird because he used to talk about it. He would comment on my weight, right, and how I, you know, you should lose weight and all, you know, all the, you know, the yucky things. We've probably all heard similar things either from people in our family or just people out there in the world because, let's face it, right, being overweight is the only prejudice that's still actively sanctioned and encouraged in society. I mean, Saturday Night Live, you know, keeps getting an overweight comic because the other ones keep dying, right? And, you know, we have sitcoms that are based around overweight characters and stuff. That doesn't happen other places. So this still gets, you know, this button still gets pushed. So my dad would, you know, did a lot of damage, and there was a lot of hurtful stuff that went on. But now I've been in OA for 2 years. I've been working the steps, and I'm 20 pounds down. And I'd gone to a family event, and I will never forget this. As a matter of fact, we have pictures from the event. I can remember what I was wearing. And I walked out, and I walked by my dad, and he said, well, and again, remember, I've been in OA working the steps. I've been through all the steps at this point, and I'm starting them again because I got sober in the Midwest, and the philosophy is there. You finish the steps and start them again, right? That's what Dr. Bob's influence was, in contrast to Bill in the New York group, who said you go through the steps one time and then cycle through 10, 11, and 12. But so I've been through the steps now. I walk by my dad. I'm 20 pounds down, and my dad, so I weigh about 180 pounds. I'm 26 years old. Walk by my dad, and he says, well, I see that you've lost some weight, but you know, you still got a lot more to go, so don't let up. And I turned around and I said, that's it. It's over. It's over. You do not talk to me about my body or my weight anymore. It's over. And I said that in front of everybody, right, in my family. And he got it. He got it. And my dad never said anything to me about my weight again. So that little thing taught me a couple of things. One, it taught me that the step work is where the healing is going to be happening, because the reality is that was emblematic of the healing that was going on in my life, that I could say to the first man in my life, stop it. My weight has nothing to do with who I am, and it certainly is nothing that you should be commenting on, right? And it also clarified to me that my health didn't necessarily, and put that necessarily also on a post-it on the wall, because that's important, that necessarily didn't have to do, that my weight didn't necessarily have to do with how healthy I was. Now, here's the thing that I believe, right? Of course, thin doesn't mean well. But overweight probably doesn't either, right? And the reality is, we don't have to worry about that. Nothing that we can see about each other is giving us any kind of relevant information. It's all about what's going on in here, right? That's what the steps address. That's what happens, is you work the steps, and I start healing in here. It would be great if being overweight had been my biggest problem. It wasn't. The same two problems that I had when I came in are the same things that I wrestle with to a much lesser extent, but they're the same things I wrestle with today. I don't love easily, and I don't forgive easily. Those are my issues, right? So whether it's the guy not turning left quickly enough in front of me, come on, let's go, right? It's the one on the right, let's go, right? Or it's my husband not putting a napkin in his lap again, right? Or it's the guy who molested me when I was a kid, right? I don't love easily and I don't forgive easily. Those are the things that need to get addressed. And when I address those through that process of the step work, specifically on the fourth step, and I just finished a fourth step, just read a fifth step to my sponsor this week. Specifically, when I've got that stuff written down on a fourth step, and if you're doing it according to the primary source material, where I'm finding my part in that fourth column, and then I take it, because the big book says I made my eight-step list when I took my fourth step, so I know that every name on my fourth step goes on my eight-step list. Well, that's a revelation. Because all of a sudden, then the guy who molested me on my four-step ends up on my eight-step list? Huh. How does that work? If we have time, we'll get to that, but we'll see. But again, this is all part of that transformation that happened in working the steps, that my thinking changes. And when my thinking changes, I start treating you differently. I love you more easily. I forgive you more easily. Why? Because I love and forgive myself more easily and readily. And that was always my problem. You know, there's another program called Al-Anon. I eat over my issues, right? I eat over wanting to control you. That's what I eat over. So, you know, that's also been very helpful for me. But, you know, obviously we're not talking about that. But my point is, in working these steps, despite the fact I wasn't done with the food, the weight slowly started coming down. Okay? So then I started bouncing. I spent about another 7-8 years bouncing between, again, the numbers are just to give you an idea in terms of how I was using food. I would say I bounced between like 155 and 170 maybe. I'd lose and gain 15 pounds 3-4 times a year. Well, that's 90 to 120 pounds. Remember? I told you I did this for a dozen years. So I actually had a registered dietitian because I saw somebody, I had a real serious health diagnosis that came in 1994. And I went to my doctor, and my doctor said, I don't know anything. You know, I know diet has something to do with this, but I don't know anything about it. No doctor does. He's the one who said that. And he was a world-renowned researcher in this thing I was diagnosed with. And he said, I don't know anything about it. Go to an RD. So I went to an RD, and she helped me get sorted out, you know, in terms of my food and stuff. I kind of forgot where I was going here. At any rate, so The wonderful thing, so I would bounce between the weight gain, that weight gain and weight loss, and I went to this RD, here's where I am. And I remember she had me tracked. She said, I want you to write down, starting the first time you went on your first diet, I was in the ninth grade, I was a cheerleader, and I had started in the seventh grade, and I was the one that went on top, and by the time I was in the ninth grade, I was what was called a base, right? Where you're leaning over, right, and all of a sudden the little girls are jumping on you. Because I'd gone through puberty, and I put on a weight. That was when the real weight gain came, is when I went through puberty. And I just had started that first diet in ninth grade and then was off and running in terms of diet. So she had me track so that when I started seeing her, I guess I was 28, 29 years old, and she had me track my weight gains and weight losses that I had had ever since I'd gone on that first diet. And I've kind of kept this up, and I kept it up over the next 7 or 8 years that I was still, you know, losing and gaining and losing and gaining. And despite the fact I'm not a 100-pounder, right, I'm not a 100-pounder, I've lost and gained over 1,600 pounds in my lifetime, right? And again, that's just because you lose and gain 15 pounds 3-4 times a year, that's 90 to 120 pounds, and I did this for 8-9 years, right? I just wasn't done with the food, and there was dieting and stuff that had gone on before I came in Overeaters Anonymous. I mean, once I started in the ninth grade, I lost and gained, lost and gained, lost and gained. That was my thing. But so the one thing I was very, very clear about as I was going along here, because now I'm in Overeaters Anonymous. Well, now I'm 8, 9, 10, 11, 12 years in, and I've done the deal. I was sponsoring people. I'd been sponsoring. Sometimes I was lower. Sometimes I was higher. But I was doing the deal, sitting in the rooms. I've never been anybody sitting on the sidelines. I always do a lot of service. I got well-trained and well-taught in Alcoholics Anonymous. I'm real clear how this works. You know, 5% of the people are doing 95% of the work. That seems to be true in just about every area of life, and that's fine. I'd still rather be somebody who's part of the 5%. So I got how this worked, but I couldn't conclusively put down the sugar, and I wasn't landing at any kind of a weight. And I kind of reconciled myself. I thought, well, maybe I'm just going to be one of those people who's going to, you know, have 5 different sizes of clothing in my closet. I'm lucky I had a boyfriend at the time. He's now my husband. He loved me no matter what I weighed, right? So I just thought, you know, maybe it's no big deal. Maybe I'll have periods of time where I'm in sugar, periods of time where I'm out. You know, probably feels worse for the people on the outside. I guess I don't feel so, you know, my poor husband, you know, my poor boyfriend. But, you know, maybe this is just how it's going to go for me. And I'd kind of reconciled myself to that. So now it is, it's fall of, it's fall of 2000, about 2000. And finally, my sponsor and my registered dietitian I was seeing at the same time said, enough with this. We're actually going to declare that you're abstinent. Because now I was 45 pounds less than when I came in. They said, you've done the deal. You've earned the right to claim abstinence. Just be honest with your food, keep doing the step work, and put your stake in the ground and claim abstinence. So I did that. I followed the direction. So the first 2 years of my abstinence, I was still eating sugar. I just wasn't done. Okay, so now it's a couple years later. It's fall of 2003, and for whatever reason, right after Halloween, I decided I was going to stop eating sugar. I was going into one of those periods where I'm going to be off the sugar, right? Remember, I kind of did this thing, and I was going to be off. Made it through Thanksgiving, made it through the holidays, made it through New Year's. It's January 12th. It's a Tuesday night, and my husband and I... No, it's the 13th. My husband, the 12th, I had a miracle conversation that happened with my mother. We don't have time for that. That was part of why this all happened that week. But it was January 13th. It was Tuesday, 2004. My husband and I have gone to dinner. I've been off sugar for about 8 weeks, gone through the holidays. So you can imagine all the feelings and everything that's building up because I've been off sugar. We've gone to one of those fancy restaurants in Hollywood, and it's late at night. We're doing the late dinner thing, doing the Vancouver, BC dinner type deal, right? Late night dinner. And after dinner, we decide we're going to have a dessert, and we're going to share a dessert. And I'm going to pretend I'm one of those women who, those cute little Hollywood types, they can have a dessert in the middle of the table, and we're going to share the dessert. Because who knows what happened? I don't know what happened at dinner that I decided to go back into the sugar. I just know that I decided it. And my poor husband's like, okay, right? Because he knows how this roller coaster goes, right? And he's on it without a seatbelt. I've at least got a seatbelt because I've made the decision, right? Nobody's going to experience the hell that you experience getting back into the sugar like me. But he's going to come close. So he's like, okay. So I order the dessert. The guy brings the dessert. So, again, it's one of those fancy desserts, you know, all the accoutrement on the, you know, the plate and everything. And we're sharing the dessert. And now I'm back in sugar. And now we got a real problem because we're sharing a dessert. And my husband's eating twice as much as I am, and I know because I'm counting. I'm counting bites, right? So now we've got real trouble because I've been off sugar for 2 months, remember? Now I got a dozen years of being in Overeaters Anonymous, chronically slipping. I've got this, And I'm back in the sugar, and it's 11 o'clock at night, so now I got to get out of this restaurant. Waiter, check, check, right? It's like, I got to get out of here because I need some real deal sugar. This is not, let's go, right? So we're walking to the car. I'm already planning the lie. I'm planning the lie that I'm going to tell my husband because I don't have the humility, right, to say, you know what, baby, we're in trouble. I need sugar. I don't have the humility to do that. Lying was a big part of my story, right? Deception, remember? Started stealing when I was 4. So I'm already planning the lie I'm going to tell my husband because I got to get more sugar because I'm back in sugar. I got to get more sugar. He's got stuff at home. I don't like his stuff, right? For me, sugar's got to be coupled with fat. I would never eat a jelly bean unless I can dip it in butter first. And he's, you know, he's got like jujubes, that kind of stuff at home. It's like, what? Are you kidding me? I'd rather eat broccoli. So I'm already planning the lie, and I think, okay, I know. I'll tell him, and I've got a very sweet, gallant husband. I thought, you know, okay, we'll get home, and I'll tell him he's got to go in and take care of the dog, and I'm on my period, and so I'm going to go get tampons. But then I need another lie because he's going to want to know, well, why, honey, let me go get the tampons for you. Then it'd be like, well, no, can't do that, you know, ovarian cysts, I know, right? Then it's like, is it cancer? I don't know. I'm just so upset. Why don't you go handle the dog? I just need some time alone. I mean, you cannot know how good, I mean, I'm a writer. That's my job. My job is to lie. I know how to create stories. I had the whole thing. And then on top of it, I thought, he's probably going to remember, I just finished my period a week ago. He's probably going to remember all this. Like, it's just insane. So we get to the car. My hand touches the handle of the car, and all of a sudden, remember, so 10 years in OA, doing the deal, right, got all that set up. My hand touches the handle, and all of a sudden I thought, wow, I'm glad we don't live in a high-rise. I thought, where did that thought come from? And in that moment, I finally got powerlessness over sugar. I got it, because I could no longer guarantee that if I kept eating, I wasn't going to take myself out of the game. I got it in that moment. I'd never gotten powerlessness before. It'd never been a problem. I didn't care if I weighed 170 pounds and was wearing a size 14 or 16 or if I was 155 and squeezing into a 10. I didn't care. But I got it in that moment that if I kept going, I couldn't guarantee that I wasn't going to take myself out. Because I've always said, well, I'm not the type that would kill myself, right? I'm a good Catholic girl. I'm not going to kill myself. That's powerlessness. It's powerlessness. I can't guarantee anymore how this is going to go. I got it in that moment. I didn't eat that night. But what I wake up and do on Wednesday the 14th? I had more sugar. Because I got a built-in forgetter, right? I got a built-in forgetter. But on the 15th, 2004, that Thursday, the sugar compulsion was removed and it's never come back. And I haven't had sugar since. And I've continued working the steps. And I use a food plan from a dietitian. I weigh and measure a lot of times, not for any other reason, but that portions, you know, I'm a quantity eater, right? I've got problems with other different foods. I don't really talk about foods as a general rule. We can talk afterwards if you want, but there's a lot of foods that I can't eat because they either don't work for, and it's not because I'm a restrictor, it's because I'm a realist and I've been here and I've paid the price. Certain things don't work for me. And I have a medical condition, so I've had doctors, traditionals and non-traditionals, saying to me for years, baby, stop eating this big category of food. Baby, you got to stop. And I finally, that has been released. That just got released 6 months ago. So because I did the work, the transformation happened, and all of a sudden I didn't have to do all that feverish eating, which was just an attempt to keep me from feeling my feelings. That's all it was ever about, you know? And I'm so glad that I held on, and I was so moved by, we had that beautiful speaker last night, Beverly. Wasn't she wonderful? She was just so amazing, and I loved how she spoke to this. She talked about, this is a, you know, there is a real flow that happens here. I don't do anything perfect. Thank God I had a sponsor and an RD right in the beginning who said, nobody's doing this thing perfectly. Trust me, the emperor ain't wearing any clothes, right? Nobody's doing this thing perfectly. I got that right from the beginning, thank God. But I loved how she really spoke to that. But I got to tell you, I also heard her say, I loved it. She said, but if you've got a problem with something, GD, put it down. You know, I really heard her say that because there's something else that I'm working on with my sponsor. It's a food that doesn't work for me, and I'm having a really hard time putting it down. But I love that that's what we get to do here is work the steps and love one another and commune with one another. And, you know, don't you love it when you think you're a hot shot, you show up at a meeting, you've been here a long time, done your deal, and all of a sudden a newcomer is giving you information and you're just sitting at their feet going, tell me more, right? Because that's how it works. None of us have the answer, but we all have an answer, right? We all have an answer that we can share with one another. So just closing this out, in terms of chronic slipping, here's what I always tell people, right? Start writing down what you're eating. And you've got to, I tell them to get a little notebook. Don't write it on a scrap of paper. And you've got to write the quantities. Because if you say I had a cheeseburger and a bag of Doritos, I don't know if that bag of Doritos is the one you got at 7-Eleven or the one you got at Costco. Right? And let me tell you something. You know why I know that? Because I've done that with my sponsor. What'd you have last night? Oh, yeah, I had some of those. How many did you have, precious? You know, I mean, that's what we do. That's part of what we do. And what's behind that isn't just the deception. It's about the pain. It's about the, I'm afraid if I lay it out there, you're not going to love me anymore. Why? Because I had a daddy who didn't like, because he had a fat daughter. I mean, it's all that old stuff, right? So healings happen, miracles happen, but there's just old residue that, you know, that we deal with. That's why we get to just handle and be with each other in such loving, compassionate ways. You know, we just get to be so loving and sweet with one another. That's the whole deal. But so I always have people, in terms of chronic slipping, start writing down what you're eating. I mean, I've been in line at the grocery store and talked to people. You know, you're looking at one of those magazines talking about so-and-so's lost so much weight and people getting conversations. And I've told people in grocery lines that I'm an Overeaters Anonymous, right? Breaking anonymity is at the level of press, radio, film, and other public form of media, right? But I can tell anybody I'm an Overeaters Anonymous, and I'll tell anybody who wants to listen, right? I 12-step all the time. And that's a great opportunity to 12-step. And, you know, most times people aren't interested. I mean, I just rode the elevator down with somebody who said, what's this big convention? I see you guys are at it. She was an overweight woman. She said, yeah, what's this big convention you guys are at? What's going on down there? And I said, oh, it's called Overeaters Anonymous. So it's a 12-step fellowship for eating. She said, okay, yeah. She said, is that like AA? And I said, yeah, it is like AA. She said, well, what are you doing in OA? You don't look like you need OA. I said, well, I used to weigh 200 pounds. And then I stopped talking. And then she stopped talking, right? So, I 12-step all the time because that's my part of my primary purpose, right? And I do it in a loving way. And I don't believe that every overweight person needs Overeaters Anonymous. This is not a program for people who need it. It's not a program for people who want it. It's a program for people who do it, right? And I don't know what anybody needs to do or wants to do or what it is they might be afraid to feel. Again, because I work with chronic slippers, I'm not concerned whether you put down the food. I'm concerned that you do the work because that's the second thing. That's the only thing that matters is if we're going to work together, if we're going to roll together, you got to do the work. If you don't want to do the work, I'm probably not the sponsor for you. I'm probably not. But if you're in the water, if you're drowning and you're in the water, you probably want to get in a boat. Doesn't matter if it's a red boat, blue boat, brown boat, purple boat, green boat. I'm never anybody who recommends people shop for a sponsor. People are like, oh, I got to shop for a sponsor and find a right sponsor. I'm like, really? You're drowning. Get in a boat. Get in a boat. Right? And if you got in my boat, you got in my boat. And if you don't want to be in my boat, I will row you, paddle you, sail you. I will kayak you. I will get you wherever you need to be. I will hold your hand while you're getting in somebody else's boat. But get in a boat. Because the sharks are swallowing, you know. I mean, they're circling. And you're chum in the water. If you want out of the water. If you don't, I'll throw you a life raft and love you and pray for you and do all that stuff, right? But those are the two things that have to be going on in terms of dealing with chronic slippers. You've got to get accountability with what you're putting in your mouth, and you've got to start working the steps. Those are the things from my experience that changed my life, right? And again, remember, I'm still dealing. I'm not dealing with the weight issue, but I'm dealing with the love and the forgiveness. How open is my heart? How vulnerable am I? You know, that's the deal. That's the only deal. That's the only thing that matters is how loving I can be with you. That's the real prize. That's the only prize. I mean, it was nice. I'll just tell you this, that I showed up at my 30-year high school reunion. I'm 51, and so did this a couple of years ago. And, you know, there were the boys who used to say mean stuff to me in high school, and, you know, there's a few of them that you know, said really hurtful stuff that really stayed with me. And now they're all, you know, most of them are kind of overweight, and you knew that kind of going in because everybody has Facebook. And I got to sit down with those guys and ask to see pictures of their children and love them and celebrate them and be kind and loving with an open heart. And I looked pretty good. Right, again, it doesn't give you any value. It's no sense of value. My value has nothing to do with what size I wear or, you know, anything like that. But it felt really good to know that I had really been healed because I got it, that I love you. And you did hurtful things, and bless your heart, and I've done hurtful things. And I want to be forgiven, and perhaps you want to be forgiven, and all is well. Because that's the healing that happened through the step work that solved my problem. Heal within, it can't help but show up on your body. That's been my experience. So glad to be here. So that's it for me. So now, I hope I did this right in terms of the format and all that stuff. So now what we can do is we can either do sharing if you want to throw out questions, and I can give my 2 cents. Other people can weigh in. If you come in on the mic, if you just want to share, you can do that. Just make sure if you end up sharing that you have signed this form. That's just giving Overeaters Anonymous clearance because they are making this available, you know, as on the website. And just come on up if you've got a... Okay, sure. Sure. Do you want to introduce yourself just to say hello?
Or?
Hey, Sarah. Yeah. Yeah. Well, if I really, and Sarah, I am, and I'm sorry, and if people don't want to say your name, that's fine too, but Sarah, just before you leave, please sign the sheet. Because I asked your name, I got to have you sign the sheet. If I really believe what it talks about in the doctor's opinion, and I really believe Bill's story, I can only eat on a lie today. There are only 3 lies. If I really believe what William Silkworth talks about, that there is a physiological allergy, right? Something will happen physiologically. Like, I got a sister who's allergic to cats, right? You put her in a room with a cat, she's going to start snotting and snorting. It's just a matter of time. It's not like she can go in a room and say, oh, it's a tabby cat. No, I'm fine with tabbies. It's the black cats, right? Those are the ones that get me snotting. No, she's allergic to cats. If I really believe that this is an allergy, that there's a physical allergy, right, but the problem rests in my mind. It's not an urban myth. It does take 21 days. Credible allergists have said that, no, that's true. But the problem is not about the physical. It's about the emotional. If I really believe what Silkworth says, and I believe what Bill Wilson wrote, that he tried all the various things to try and get him to stop using, right, the alcohol, and he couldn't do it. If I really believe those, I can only eat on a lie today. And there are 3 lies. It's not going to bother me this time. Sugar's not going to bother me this time. It's always bothered me in the past, but it's not going to bother me today. 2, second lie, it's going to bother me, but I'm going to be able to control it. It's going to bother me, but I am starting on Monday. I am starting on Monday the 26th because it's Wayne Gretzky's birthday. I'm a big hockey fan. It's all going to start on Monday the 26th, right? That's the second lie. And the 3rd lie is it doesn't matter. My life has no value anyway. So those are just those conventional lies in terms of, am I facing the truth about the eating disorder, Sarah? But in terms of the lie, and again, this is more of probably a conversation. Well, it's most definitely a conversation better to have kind of one-on-one. But, kiddo, if somebody, this has been from my experience, and because I have sponsored Chronic Slippers exclusively for, you know, 15 years, from the experience of countless people I've worked with, if I'm in the rooms and I'm doing the deal, I'm showing up, I'm being in, working the steps with a sponsor, I'm doing what we do here, and I'm still not getting it, whatever getting it means to you, like I think about the 10 years I wasn't putting down sugar, the lie for me is that I didn't want to feel the sad feelings and the horrible feelings I felt about having grown up in that home and dealing with a family that was largely unavailable and still remains largely unavailable. I love my family. I think they love me. I'm real clear I love them. But I got married 4 years ago, and nobody from my immediate family came to my wedding. Right? And it's not like they live in Asia. They live in Michigan and Texas. Right? So that's the kind of family I came from. I did not want to feel those feelings, Sarah. I got really hurt. I had a major health diagnosis. My aunt had died of what I got diagnosed with. Nobody in my family ever called me after they found out about it. Nobody. In the 8 years that I used to call and talk to my parents before my mother and I had that magic conversation I told you about, my mother never would ask about my health when I got on the phone. Her sister had died of it years before. That's the kind of family I came from. I can feel it now. I can feel it coming up now. I couldn't feel those feelings. So the lie for me is that I was saying, no, I'm okay. I'm fine. I forgive my family. I love them, right? I'm fine. I'm good. Where are the M&Ms? Right? I could not feel the feelings. That was my lie. But from my experience, if people are here and you are doing the deal and you have not stopped the behavior, if you haven't stopped throwing up, if you haven't stopped starving, if you haven't stopped doing quantity eating, if you haven't stopped the sugar and you know that sugar is killing you, somewhere there's something you're telling yourself that is not the truth. And all I'm saying is, let's stop lying about it. You know, it's not a moral issue. It's not a moral issue to be a size 18. It's not a moral issue. It's not a moral issue to be overweight. It's not a moral issue to be bulimic. It's not a moral issue to be anorexic. Now, I did sponsor a woman in Alcoholics Anonymous who used to drive her kids to school drunk every morning. Now, quite frankly, that's a moral issue. But before I could figure out what to do there and get clear from my sponsor how to handle that, she moved back to Ireland. So, that's been my experience. Somewhere I'm telling myself something. Because the reality is there's a whole community here of people that will love you up and hold you and hold your hand and walk you through whatever it is you have to feel. It's all about the feelings. That's what it is. You put the food down, you're going to start feeling. The reason you pick it up again, you don't want to feel. We will help you feel. We will help you. We will help you feel. Yep.
Hi,
Diana. Make sure you come sign up. Oh, I guess I've been around this weight around 7-8 years, maybe. Yep.
Like, for me, I like eating, you know, it makes me numb, so I don't feel the feeling.
Yeah.
And I like that.
Yep.
So how do I get past that?
Well, it's probably a conversation, you know, I don't know that we're going to nail it down, but I would love to chat with you. I can give you my card, let's chat, and I'm happy to share my experience and, you know, might be able to throw some insight and give you some ideas. You know, would love to hear more about what you have to say. Is that okay if we do it that way? I would love to talk with you. I would love it. No, I get it on the numb thing. I so get it. I've never understood bulimics. I've never understood bulimics. They're like, ooh, I hate that full feeling. I'm like, really? That's what I'm going for. Right? Give me a Sunday afternoon and a punch bowl full of pasta. I'm there, right? Napping on a Sunday afternoon because you pass out. That's what I want. Yep.
I'm Carol, and I'm a compulsive overeater.
Hi, Carol. Very good.
And also, I've signed up there. I'm involved in the other couple of programs that you mentioned. My experience has been that the obsession was completely lifted from the first program that I went to.
Sure.
In Overeaters Anonymous, well, and I had a psychic spiritual experience.
Cool.
Change.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not the same person that I was. My food looks good. I give my food to my sponsor on a daily basis. But the mental obsession remains and has not been lifted. What can you tell me about that? Even though my food is clean, I'm still thinking about eating and eating mass quantity.
Yeah, I I don't know. I don't have any experience with this. Here's just the thing that came up as I was listening to you, though, is if you've got a mental obsession going, it's keeping you from thinking about something else. So if I'm thinking about, right, even if I'm not acting on it, and I'm thinking about, I want this, I want this, I want this, I want this, there's something I'm not thinking about over here. So I don't know what it is or why it is that you don't want to be present over here, right? So you're not acting out on it. So if it's, I want that pen, I want that pen, I want that pen, I want that pen, but you're not going to grab the pen, you're not going to pick it up, but you're still thinking about the want. There's something that's not happening over here. I don't know what that's about. I don't know, and I'm not a healthcare professional and don't pretend to be. But there's certainly something you're not staying present to in your life, and that's what it's, I think that's what it's about. I think it's very, very simple. You know, I got the little stone out of the box yesterday that was keep it simple. I think this is actually very, very simple. You know, we used to say in Alcoholics Anonymous in the Midwest that smart people can get this too. It just takes longer. Right? It's actually very simple. So again, if you've got an obsession going over here, there's something you're not wanting to deal with over here. And we can chat more about it, and you know, maybe, I mean, there are wonderful professionals, and there are some, you know, people that I know people have had really great experience with, and you know, something, and I think it's very simple. I don't think it's a big complicated thing. I really don't. I think sometimes it's just about knowing that you're safe and it's safe to feel. Anybody else? You know, I told you about the wedding. On the day of my wedding, when none of my family came, because I didn't want to end up with a resentment, because I knew what was it. Can you imagine this? My poor husband, he's been through everything he's been through at the honeymoon. My family, because I knew none of them were going to call me. I knew nobody was going to call me on the day of my wedding. I had one sister who didn't even send the RSVP, that she wasn't coming, right? That's the kind of family I came from. And I don't get to be a victim. Because if I'm a victim, the world will continue to give me opportunities to, you know, feel victimized. So I don't want to do that whole victim thing, right? The fourth step and the eighth and ninth step taught me don't go the victim route. So I knew I couldn't be a victim. So I called all three. My oldest brother had died. He died of diabetes at 36. So he was gone. He would have called me on my wedding. He would have come, actually. He would have come to eat the wedding cake. He never stops eating sugar. It's part of why he went down with the diabetes. My mother died of diabetes, too, at 68. She got diagnosed at 66. But she, too, like in addition to me, in addition to the diabetes, they had a sugar compulsion that was just raging. But I called my three surviving siblings the morning of my wedding, right, just to call them and tell them. And I, for instance, I got my brother on the phone, and I said, "Hi, Greg, it's Sheila. I'm just calling. I know you're thinking about me today, and I just wanted to call you and tell you I love you. I know you'd be here if you could." And he's, "Oh, right, thinking about you today, right, yes, the wedding." He hadn't even remembered, right? I called all of them, told them I love them, got it all out of the way. Because can you imagine if I'd gone on my honeymoon and I hadn't heard from my siblings? What a nice honeymoon that would have been for my husband, right? So these are the things that need to get cleaned up and cleared out so that I'm not dealing with the food, so that I can be present and love you and love the best about you. Just in the same way that there are hurtful things that I've done to people in the world and I want to be forgiven, I have to forgive everybody of everything all the time. That's what a friend of mine says. Forgive everybody of everything all the time. That's my directive. Right? Because it says that resentment will kill you. It says that in the big book. Resentment's just a $2 word for "I don't forgive you, asshole." Right? That's all resentment is. So I'm real clear how this works. We have to get cleaned out so that we can be accessible and available. Why? When I'm accessible and available, I'm not afraid to feel anything. I'm not afraid to feel the family that never was there for me. I'm not afraid to feel those things. I'm not afraid to feel the sadness, the fears that I have around sex. Still. Because of having been molested. I'm not afraid to feel those things. Right? I can be present. So that's the blessing. That's the gig with chronic slipping. Getting accountable with your food and working the steps. And just keep coming here. Just keep coming here. Just fall to the ground. Fall to the ground and we will drag you to the winning side. I promise. I promise. Very good. Thank you. Thank you for coming. Have a great weekend. Yes. Okay, let's close with the Serenity Prayer, shall we, quickly? All right, very good. Again, just taking that moment of silence for the compulsive eater, bulimic, or anorexic who's suffering in this room or out there. We know they're out there, and they might even be in here. She might even be standing right where I'm standing. God, grant me the serenity to accept the things I cannot change, the courage to change the things I can, and the wisdom to know the difference. Amen. Keep coming back. It's working. It's working. That's what I always say. Keep coming back. It's working.
Yay. Stay away. If you gave your name, please come sign the sheet.
I would like all your cards. Yes, you remind me of.